You're listening to Vatican Radio. A picture is worth a thousand words, we're told. But what does a picture tell us about our spiritual life? Methodist minister Philip Richter sets out to answer that question in a new book entitled Spirituality in Photography, Taking Pictures with a Deeper Vision. A passionate amateur photographer himself, Reverend Richter offers a wealth of tips on taking good photos with smartphones or professional cameras. But at the same time, he reflects on how to use those same skills in our search to make sense of contemporary society. His short yet deceptively simple volume is part user manual for photographers, part prayer guide for those seeking a deeper, more meaningful relationship with God and with the world around us. Richter is in Rome this week for a study tour and a book launch at the Libreria Claudiana in Piazza Cavour on Saturday morning. He dropped into Vatican Radio to tell me more about his work.
I've been a Methodist minister for nearly 40 years. At the moment, I work for the Connectional Team, which means working for the church nationally based in London.
Tell us a little bit about the Methodist Church in the UK. I think, like most of the mainline churches, you're facing challenges of declining numbers and so on.
We have just under 200,000 members of the church, but have an influence over a lot of other people who are part of our community who don't necessarily sign up to be church members.
I imagine this book is in some way designed also to reach out to people who wouldn't necessarily be regular paid-up church-going members, if you like.
Yes, the book is designed both for people who do go to church, but also for people who don't do religion, as was once famously said. And in a sense, I'm actually probably more interested in the people who don't go to church, because what I've found is that people are picking up the book and looking at it, starting to read it, even when they haven't got any background in religion.
Your own passion for photography goes back to your very earliest years, doesn't it?
I don't know when I started my interest in photography, but there are photographs of me as quite a young child with an old box brownie taking pictures. I mean, interestingly, the picture was taken by my parents on what must have been a 35mm camera on slide film. So they must have had a much better camera than I did. I must have had their hand-me-down.
And you've been taking photographs ever since?
Yes, I have. I suppose once I became a Methodist minister, I didn't have the money to buy all the really expensive equipment. And it was the advent of digital photography which made it all much more possible and much cheaper. And I describe it as democratizing the medium, because nowadays virtually everybody has a camera, be it an ordinary camera or most people a smartphone, that can take pretty decent photos.
You talk about democratizing the medium. We could also talk about it dumbing down, though, couldn't we?
The danger is that people can take so many pictures without a second's thought. In times past, you had to load your camera with a reel of film, you had to buy the film, you had to get it processed, and you would think twice about the pictures that you were taking. Whereas now you can just snap away, and some of those pictures will be lovely, I'm sure, and it will help to record important events in people's lives. But a lot of the pictures you probably won't want to keep, and they won't have any meaning to you.
Is part of the reason for this book really a reaction against our kind of throwaway Snapchat, Instagram era?
Yes, I'm encouraging people to just think before they snap, to look around and think about what's actually moving them in the scene. What's coming out at them from the picture they're trying to take? Do they want to take all of it, or do they want to focus in on part of it? Do they want to take a different vantage point, maybe, from the one they're actually standing in? Do they want to zoom in or zoom out? Important questions, because by that, they're actually framing the picture. And the way they frame the picture will have important bearing on what it looks like at the end, but also on what they're including and excluding in their own lives. Now, what are they choosing to photograph? Are they excluding important things?
You're very much using this medium of photography, aren't you, to suggest, as you say, that people reflect on their own way of dealing with their neighbours, their own way of examining their own lives. It's a kind of seamless moving between one and the other, isn't it?
Yes. It seemed to me that there are any number of books that told you how to do photography. You can go on the internet or buy books or photographic magazines that will tell you what you have to do, how you adjust your camera to get the perfect photograph of this or that. But after a while, those sort of books become a bit soulless. So what? Because it's actually the picture that matters, and the person behind the camera who's seen the picture there or not, as the case may be. And I think it's important to really be attentive to what's there and not to rush into it.
You talk a lot about sense of perspective as well, don't you, and keeping things in proportion, both in photography and in our own lives.
Yes, I think photography and spirituality, I think, can inspire each other. It can work both ways. And if you begin to think about perspective in photography and how you achieve it, how you recognise perspective when it's there, then it can actually set you thinking about the perspective in your own life. You know, whether you're thinking in terms of what's on the horizon, what's in the near distance, what's on your doorstep, and therefore the things that actually really need doing here and now, and the things that can be safely put on one side for a while. Because the tendency in our busy lives nowadays is that we get the latest email, we respond to it, and we're being reactive all the time. Whereas sometimes it's important, I think, just to shelve some things and deal with the really important things and people around you.
We also used to say, of course, that cameras can never lie. And yet now, in today's world, you can do almost anything with filters and photoshopping. I mean, that completely revolutionises, doesn't it, the way we think about photography?
Yeah, sometimes things like Photoshop can be used in an artistic way. Sometimes they can be used to simply lie and to suggest that people were there, that things happened that never did. But of course, this goes right back to the early days of photography anyway. People could do it in a chemical darkroom as well as in an electronic darkroom. And it seems to me that the important thing is that you don't manipulate the truth. Now, sometimes when you come back with your camera or your smartphone and look at your photos on the computer, they're not quite what you expected. The camera hasn't quite seen what the human eye saw. So to be able to just slightly manipulate those pictures and make them look as you saw it, I don't think that's wrong at all. But when people start photoshopping people in and out or objects in and out, then you're dealing with something quite different. And of course, that would be totally wrong in a journalistic context, for instance, although some journalists have tried to do that.
This is also about the relationship, isn't it, between the photographer and the person who's looking at the photograph.
Yes, the best photographs are taken when the photographer has set up a relationship with the person being photographed. Sometimes people, as tourists, will go around just taking pictures of anybody that they come across. And you can usually see in those photographs the resistance on the part of the person being photographed, that they don't really want to be their picture taken. In fact, by using that language, it's suggesting that we are taking something from the other person. And it's much nicer and more courteous to ask the person whether you could take their photo, or if you've already taken the photo, whether you can keep the photo. Because nowadays we could delete a photo if somebody felt it was not appropriate.
You also talk in the book about photographing the ordinary, the everyday, don't you? And this resonates very strongly with the whole Jesuit spiritual principle of finding God in all things.
Yes, a lot of people will only do their photography when they go away somewhere exotic, if they're on holiday or for special events in their lives. But I'm encouraging people to look for their images around them. You know, start within a mile of where you live and then just go out from there. And as an example of this, the front cover of the book is a beautiful picture. And I want to ask you, where do you think that might be taken?
It's on a coastline somewhere around the UK, presumably close to where you live, is it?
Well, it wasn't taken by me. It was taken by another very good photographer. And I thought it was taken by a Scottish loch or something like that. Now, I was told that the actual story the other day, it was taken within about a mile of where this person lives. And it's actually, and I hope this is going to put you off the picture, it's actually a picture of a pig farm that has a big area of water when it rains around it. And because it's at sunrise, you can't actually tell where it is. But it is a most beautiful picture taken right on this person's doorstep.
And so learning to see things in a different light is one of the main messages, isn't it, that comes through from this book?
Yes, and seeing it in a different light and also taking advantage of the different light. A lot of people will not necessarily wait for the best light. If you're somewhere at midday, you might as well put your camera away. All the light would be very harsh. I actually arrived at the Ponte Sant'Angelo at midday today. I thought to myself, everything is just completely bleached out, really. No contrast anywhere. Whereas a few hours later, of course, all the details starts coming back in. And the hour just after sunrise and the hour just before sunset can be the most beautiful light, the so-called golden hours.
This book is really something of a user's manual, isn't it? You encourage people to write their reflections, to put in their best pictures. It's not just a book for a quick read, is it?
No, we're actually encouraging people to use it maybe a week at a time or even a month at a time. And there are challenges at the end of each section for people to take their camera out and explore the areas of photography that I've been talking about, and also the areas of spirituality, and to see those as two overlapping areas that they can work with.
Are you concerned today that we somehow have lost the ability to really see things around us, to really appreciate, to take this time to slow down, to see things and to be more appreciative of our surroundings?
Yes, I fear that for a lot of people that's the case. We're so used to being bombarded with images on the internet and social media. We scroll up and down our screens and just look at images very briefly. It takes a very arresting image for us to stop, I think, and look at it more closely. But even the arresting images, we move on from very quickly. And I think it's therefore important that people do print out their images and spend time with them and become absorbed in them. And if they're still on screen, that they display them full screen and spend time with them, if they're images that are beginning to mean a lot to them.
And yet there are pictures today, aren't there, that go viral, as we say. I mean, there are iconic pictures which really do manage to capture and to tell a story of an entire tragedy or war or whatever it is.
Yes, I think that's the beauty of images, that, as they say, a picture tells a thousand words, and I think that is really true. It's either the very best pictures or sometimes the very quirky, humorous pictures that go viral. But I think the very best pictures will always have an ongoing life. Obviously, once the photographer has taken them, they don't have any control over how people receive them. So you've got three important people. You've got the subject of the photograph, the photographer, and then the viewer.
What is your message then to perhaps a first-time photographer, somebody who's never really thought about taking up this hobby or had never really thought about engaging it in a spiritual fashion? What is your core message to them?
I think my core message is enjoy what you're doing. Don't try to become too expert, because you'll concentrate too much on the camera and not on what you're actually photographing. Obviously, read the book. That might be helpful. But essentially, slow down, take your time, and become truly attentive to what God has given you in the world around you to see and receive, the places and the people.
My thanks to Methodist minister Philip Richter, author of Spirituality in Photography.